try that again. Our House Committee on Sustainability and Economic Development will come to order. The first matter of business before us today is House Bill 2809, which was carried over from March 17th. And I believe we have Representative Huffman. Do we have Representative Huffman?
We do not.
We do not.
That's fine.
Why don't you go ahead and read the summary?
HB 2809. Allows two municipalities who adopted urban renewal plans prior to December 5, 1996, but were prevented by voters from adopting a maximum indebtedness, to change the way tax increment revenues are calculated by county assessors. By enabling the affected cities to irrevocably convert an urban renewal plan from standard rate plan to reduced rate plan for consolidating tax rate purposes. Reduced rate plans have no impact on general obligation bond or local option levies approved after October 6, 2001.
I think, committee members, that this was carried over just for the purpose of looking at a fiscal, is that correct?
Correct.
And revenue. Unless a revenue, actually. And does anyone have any comments on this? If not, I would entertain a due pass motion.
Mr. Chair?
Are we in work session or are we in public hearing?
Yeah.
We're in work session.
We are in work session.
We're in work session. No. You go ahead.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Bailey. Representative Bailey, please proceed.
I move House Bill 2809 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Discussion? Any objections? See none. The HB 2809 is to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And the carrier will be Representative Huffman, because he indicated he would be willing to do so. Okay, let's go to, we open a work session on HB 2182, which is carried over from March 17th. And members of the committee, you will remember that this was a, in fact, I'll just have you, Barbara, read the summary.
Amend statute to expand the eligibility of alternative fuel projects to use the State Department of Energy's Small-Scale Energy Loan Program, SELP. Expands eligibility from vehicle fleets and fueling facilities to include other kinds of equipment fueled by alternative energy sources. Increases the term of service for members of the Small-Scale Local Energy Project Advisory Committee from 2 years to 4 years.
I think we'll have Jeff Quito come up and explain. I believe we have two proposed amendments, is that right?
Correct.
And Jeff, if you could explain the first one first and the second one second, and compare the two for us, that would be good.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Quito, Assistant Director at the Department of Energy. To explain a little bit about the proposed amendment number one, redefined equipment in the attempt to exclude personal individual vehicles, personal household vehicles. After discussion with legislative counsel and others, it appears that that was not the case. So amendment number one basically would allow the financing of equipment and including vehicles, but those could include personal vehicles, which would be alternative fuel vehicles, such as electric cars, et cetera. The Dash 2 amendment more specifically adds in section, and these both amendments are in section 1.1a. And amendment number 2 specifically addresses that vehicles are not used primarily for personal, family, or household purposes. So it specifically excludes personal vehicles.
Questions? Representative Bailey.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I was really hoping to go down to the dealership after passage of this bill. But nevertheless, I move the Dash 2 amendment to House Bill 2182.
Are we allowed to do that, given the notice situations?
We don't have a fiscal revenues on it yet, so we'll carry it over, but we can adopt the amendments.
Okay.
We can't pass the bill out.
There's been a motion to adopt the amendments. Are there the Dash 2 amendments?
Oh, it's
Discussion? Objections? Dash two amendments? No objections. The dash two amendments passed. And I think we're going to carry that over then until we have a fiscal. Okay, so that brings us to opening a public hearing. Thank you, Mr. Keto. Opening a public hearing on HJR 6. Please read the summary.
HJR 6 encourages the state to develop broadband policy to provide the foundation and direction for public and private sector decisions and actions to maintain Oregon's leadership and competitive position in broadband telecommunications, to keep the state competitive with other states, and ensure that all communities have broadband and all communities' broadband interests are met.
I believe our first witness for public hearing purposes is Representative Riley. Is it Riley? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, before I just wanted to recognize that with you as chair, the productivity and efficiency has expanded immensely. We've already passed one bill to the floor, we've amended another, and now we're doing public testimony. So this is kudos to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. I won't mention anything about party differences. Please, Representative, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee, for the record, Chuck Riley, State Representative from Hillsborough, Corneas, and Forest Grove. And I want to say that, you know, the productivity does seem to have improved in spite of Representative Galizio. So, I also want to note before I get into my testimony that Representative Gilliam will not be allowed to introduce any bills that are not on the schedule just because the chair is gone. So,
thank you.
With that, the summary pretty much said everything I wanted to say. This bill came out of the Government Accountability and Information Technology Committee during the interim and was introduced pre-session. I chaired that committee, and so I wanted to come up and discuss this very briefly. We had several hearings on broadband communication and other means of telecommunication and data communication during our interim session, and I'm convinced that, you know, we want to do everything we possibly can as a state to encourage broadband coverage as broad as possible across the state, so that it can be used by education, hospitals, state police, anyone who has any need for that kind of broadband coverage, to get on the internet, to telecommute. Actually, it could be a good method for doing robotics from rural areas, in hospitals, in urban areas. There are many, many uses for this, and I just wanted to encourage the committee to, you know, pass this resolution and move it on to the floor.
Thank you, Representative Riley. Are there questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think we have a number of panels ready to testify, and we are aware of the fact that the folks from the Dalles will need to get back early, but we are going to delay getting to them because we are moving along so rapidly. So we'll start with our first panel, which is made up of Joe O'Leary, Nancy Hamilton, and is that correct, Barbara, that we have those two folks first?
I think we can just have Joe O'Leary.
Joe O'Leary, okay.
And Ray Baum.
And Chris Ray Baum.
Yeah, and Chris Tamron.
Oh, good, please.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Great.
Gentlemen, who would like to go first?
Well, it's been delegated to me, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Baum, I'm very happy to see you, and please proceed.
It's good to see you, too. Chairman Benz, members of the committee, Commissioner Ray Baum of the Oregon Public Utility Commission. I'm here today on behalf of the commission and also in my capacity as chairman of the National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissioners Telecommunications Committee, which is a mouthful. We deal with the federal policy on broadband deployment through that committee on a nationwide basis. What I'd like to do is, if you have a copy of this outline of my testimony, it's not very long, it's just a couple of pages,
okay,
two pages. I'd like to use this to follow along with what I talk about. Last week, I was back in Washington, D.C. to talk to the National Telecommunications and Information Agency, which is a subdivision office of the Department of Commerce, a little-known agency until it just received $4.7 billion of taxpayers' money to fund broadband deployment. So this is what the criteria of the statute states. It's $4.7 billion in grant money. It's to be led on a competitive first-come, first-served basis, and it has a 20% match. Qualifying purposes are listed there under subparagraph triple I, equipment and infrastructure, construction cost, access by anchor institutions, which is mainly aimed at hospitals and commercial establishments and schools and libraries, access to low-income and other vulnerable populations, and, of course, to deal with improved public safety communication service. Now, there's some specific allocations in this $4.7 billion. First of all, there's a $350 million for broadband mapping of states. Now, Oregon hasn't done a broadband map, and $350 million is way too much money to do that. Our experience in California, Kentucky, South Carolina, Wyoming has been that this can be done in those states between $300,000 and $750,000 is what's happened in those states. So this money is the ceiling money. The leftovers of this money that aren't spent on that purpose will be reverted back into the general purposes of the broadband stimulus package. The $250 million allocation to sustain adoption of broadband, that's aimed at largely urban populations that have the service nearby but don't have the ability to subscribe for reasons that they don't have a computer, they don't have an interest in it, and they can't afford it. Then there's $200 million for public computer center capacity aimed at schools and libraries. Those are, again, floors, but much more can be spent on that. The public hearings there are scheduled in D.C. last week and continue. There's two in the West, one in Flagstaff, Arizona, and one in Las Vegas, Nevada, and that's on March 17th and 18th. The criteria is there's a minimum of one grant per state, and the purpose is to increase affordability and subscribership to the greatest populations and the greatest broadband speed to the greatest population, enhance services for healthcare, education, and children to the greatest population, avoid unjust enrichment. That means you can't have double dipping in different federal programs, consideration given to socially and economically disadvantaged businesses, and it must adhere to the FCC's broadband policies regarding non-discrimination and network interconnection. And then the grant receivers are to report to Congress in 1 year from February 17th. Let me talk to you about, on the second page, is the RUS. That is the Rural Utility Service. That's a office of the United States Department of Agriculture. It has given $2.5 billion to fund broadband loans and grants. 75% of that money has to be targeted to rural areas to facilitate economic development. It has project priorities, and again, they're trying to encourage some competition in subparagraph one there. And they're trying to cover as many rural residents that don't have broadband. And they're also targeted to former borrowers under this fund, which are the small telephone companies. Many of you have some of those in your districts, but it's mainly the small companies that do not include companies like Verizon and Quest. Also, they must demonstrate that the project elements will be fully funded and that can be completed if the requested funds are provided, and it must commence promptly following approval, and they cannot receive funds from the NTIA program. Now, what is the role of the states in all this? There's no statutory express role in the Rural Utility Service. Provisions of the law has passed. The providers in that process are given direct application to the RUS. However, in speaking with the director of this department and some folks who are likely to remain in charge, they may seek some state coordination of these efforts because they anticipate a huge flood of applicants and they won't be able to handle it since they only have 24 employees. NTIA is allowed by statute. They may consult with the states. The secretary may consult with the states. And then in those famous conference report, which is very similar to the budget notes we put on appropriations bills, which is not law, but it's advisory to the agency, the conference report directs the NTIA to consult with the states on the identification of unserved and underserved areas, the allocation of grant funds to projects affecting each state. Then it encourages the states to coalesce stakeholders and partners in assessing community needs and meeting the other requirements of the Act. And the states that the NTIA may use its discretion to assist the states in monitoring the expenditure of these funds under the terms of the Act. The following deadlines apply. The application rules will probably be sometime later in the month of April, certainly not too far into the month of May. And that's all because the Act states as a goal to have 50% of the, if you exclude the broadband mapping money, about $4.35 billion, half of that they'd like to see out the door by June 17th of this year. Now, you have to understand that NTIA has never dispersed more money than $50 million in 1 year, and that was several years ago. So they're reaching out to the states for help on how to do this and how to prioritize these applications. They're trying to talk about three different tranches. They call them tranches, disbursements over the next year and a half. The first one would be by June 17th. The next one would occur 4 to 6, 8 months later. And then the final distribution of all the funds has to be done by September 30th, 2010. Also attached to my testimony is this staff report to commissioners. I don't know if you've seen that here, but that's a report to the commissioners at the PUC, which goes through, and you can see on the table of contents that summarizes the legislation in more detail than I just had with you. Then it goes through each one of the programs. Then it attaches the actual language of the statute in play here, and the federal statute for broadband deployment through the NTIA. It has the express language of the Commerce Agreement for your review. It also has the RUS provisions of the law, which are called the Distance Learning, Telemedicine, and Broadband Program Statute. Then it has the Broadband Mapping Statute, which was passed last year but wasn't funded until this act got into place. So then it has the FCC Broadband Policy Statement, which deals with interconnection and open network issues that are requirements of part of this bill. So that gives you probably more information than you'd like to have, but it gives you the ability to dig in if you want to and to have all the details at your fingertips about what this is all about. And I just want to, I've spoke with Chairman Byron. I need to also give you his regards since he's not able to be here today, and also Commissioner Savage from the PUC. Chairman Byron just talked to me this morning from D.C. They're in a state of flux back there. They don't know how to spend this money. The federal agencies are struggling to figure out how to get this kind of money out the door. RUS has about $1.4 billion of unexpended money that it hasn't spent already, and they just got $2.5 billion added to it. NTIA has never spent this kind of money before, so they're looking out for the states to help them direct and prioritize these applications. So that's the information I have to share with you at this time. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Is it the pleasure of the committee to ask questions now, or would you like to wait until we've completed this government panel's presentation? Want to wait. Okay. Let's hear from the next panel. Thank you, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe O'Leary. I'm a senior policy advisor for Governor Kulongoski. It's a pleasure to be here before you today. I have to give you the regrets of Nancy Hamilton, who's the economic development advisor to the governor, who was also invited to tag team this presentation with me today, but she is staffing an event with the governor and is unable to be here today. The Chair Reed asked Nancy and I to be here today to speak to you about the governor's office response to the federal stimulus package with respect to broadband deployment. And we've been tracking in our office all of the elements of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act in all policy areas, not just broadband, but broadband has been an area that the governor specially assigned Nancy and I to track. And wherever possible, not only in broadband, but in every other area that the Recovery Act provides funding to the states, we are seeking to enhance and ensure a coordinated approach that maximizes both the long and short-term benefits to the citizens of Oregon in the respective policy areas. Obviously, greater broadband deployment it is a positive for Oregon. It's a positive on several levels, not only for its stimulating effect on the economy through job creation, but also through the long-term benefits to our fellow citizens living in these communities, particularly the communities that are currently unserved or underserved with broadband infrastructure. Broadband, obviously, is one of those opportunities, particularly through the Department of Commerce, NTIA. And Ray mentioned to you the sort of the wiggle language in the Recovery Act that the NTIA shall consult with the states in the distribution of those funds. The governor is encouraging the Department of Commerce to interpret that language robustly. Today, actually, two letters went out from the governor. One to the United States Department of Commerce that does encourage that robust interpretation. In that letter, the governor explains his intention to facilitate a coordinated approach to Oregon's grant applications under the NTIA stimulus dollars. He outlines five categories that he will be focusing on when reviewing those applications in order to make recommendations to the Department of Commerce. The first category is telehealth, telemedicine. The second category is distance learning. The third is commerce and economic development. The fourth, public safety. And the fifth is e-government. There are two letters I mentioned. The separate letter that went out this morning under the governor's signature is a letter to the state's many telecommunications service providers. And in that letter, the governor stresses the importance of this coordinated approach, as Oregon will be competing with providers in all of the other states and territories for these dollars. And it formally asks providers to submit lists of unserved and underserved areas and the proposed projects in those areas that are believed to meet the requirements of the NTIA and the key categories I just listed for you. Obviously, time is of the essence. As Ray mentioned, the deadline is fast approaching, and we are hoping that proposals in Oregon will be submitted to the PUC for review, ultimately by the governor, within the next month. With the expertise of our state agencies and the state's various stakeholders, our hope is to assist the governor to the greatest degree possible in identifying, developing, prioritizing, and evaluating broadband projects for stimulus funding that will bring the greatest benefit to Oregonians. I also, just in closing, have to say that we are very lucky in Oregon for several reasons, but one with respect to this topic is the person sitting to my left. Ray holds, as he mentioned to you, a leadership position nationally among utility regulators and is an expert on this topic and is really helping us in a way that we would not otherwise have access to with respect to information both that we're receiving back and a channel of information that we can communicate through. So we're very uniquely postured as a state because of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Leary. Mr. Tamarin?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Christopher Tamarin. I'm with the Economic and Community Development Department. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to participate in this informational hearing on broadband in Oregon, and I've submitted written testimony for your reference. The broadband has long been recognized as an important issue in Oregon, dating back to Governor Roberts' Task Force on Telecommunications in 1991. It's quickly becoming a prominent issue and a hot topic of interest this year with the passage of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act and the availability of $7.2 billion in competitive stimulus funds for broadband infrastructure utilization and mapping. Broadband is a term that's used to represent a wide range of technologies and services. Generally, broadband is a label applied to any communications technology or service offering a better data transmission rate than that available over a standard voice-grade telephone line, which is 56 kilobits per second or usually less. Until last year, the FCC's official definition of broadband was as a transport service offering a minimum data transmission rate of 200 kilobits per second in at least one direction. Last year, 2008, the FCC established a set of broadband speed tiers, which is illustrated in my written testimony. The 200 kilobit per second rate is now characterized as first generation data, and 768 kilobits per second is now the minimum data transmission rate for basic broadband. Tiers 3 through 8 reflect the range of service speeds available and expected to become available from providers. I can share with you that broadband service technologies used to provide service in Oregon today include digital subscriber line or DSL service. DSL refers to a transmission technology that uses the same analog network local loop that we've been using for plain old voice service for years to deliver broadband internet access, cable modem, cable TV networks, which began as one-way broadcast distribution networks carrying video programming. Cable companies have been upgrading their networks to support two-way data communications for digital services, including voice and high-speed internet access. Multiple wireless technologies, including third-generation or 3G cellular, Wi-Fi, WiMAX, and satellite, are all being used to provide a wide range of fixed location and mobile wireless internet access services in the state. And then fiber to the premises. Optic glass fibers, first used in backbone networks, are now being increasingly used in high-performance distribution networks that extend all the way to the homes and offices of end users. These broadband service technologies range in transmission performance from 200 kilobits per second all the way up to 50 megabits per second. Another issue to consider when discussing broadband is whether the service is symmetrical or asymmetrical. Most broadband services are asymmetrical, which means that the transmission speeds from the user to the network and from the network to the user are not the same. Typically, the upstream data rate is less than the downstream rate, which reflects the common query response usage pattern in the network. But this pattern is beginning to change as end users are increasingly becoming content providers or have large data files to transfer, and also as they become engaged in real-time applications like voice over IP and video conferencing. The perceived value of broadband has changed dramatically in recent years with the growth and development of the internet and the growth of information and communication and entertainment services available over it. The internet grew by over 23% in 2008 to over 1.5 billion users worldwide. There's a law in telecommunications, Metcalfe's law, which states that the value of a telecommunications network grows exponentially with the number of users connected to it. And we are certainly seeing that illustrated in the increasing value and importance of the internet. So where are we in Oregon today? Telecommunications infrastructure has become a real strength and strategic asset for the state. Oregon is benefiting from significant infrastructure improvements due to the forward-looking actions of both our public and private sectors, with the construction of fiber networks, fiber coaxial cable networks, wireless networks, and improvements to the twisted pair legacy copper networks. Oregon is served by robust fiber optic backbone networks from multiple carriers with virtually unlimited capacity. Oregon communities are served by a variety of broadband distribution network technologies and service providers. The legacy telephone company Twisted Pair Copper Networks have been upgraded to provide DSL. As I mentioned, cable companies have upgraded their networks and are providing two-way broadband data communications. Wireless networks have been deployed to offer fixed and mobile broadband internet access. And fiber to the premises networks have been deployed in 25 communities in 8 counties in Oregon. The 2008 Oregon Population Survey conducted by the Oregon Progress Board reported that 79% of all Oregon households have personal computers, 74% have internet access, and 61% have high-speed internet access, noting that high-speed internet access has doubled in Oregon since 2004. The survey report on demand usage and supply and pricing of broadband by the PUC released in January 2007 reported that the number of high-speed lines in the state had increased tenfold since the year 2000. PCMag.com, an online computer guide, recently ranked Oregon's high-speed internet access as 14th best in the nation and estimated Oregon has a 59.6% broadband penetration. The Pew Internet and American Life Project reported in 2008 that a 57.54% of the Oregon households access broadband in their home, while over 75% access broadband from all available sources, home, office, school, or libraries. The Communication Workers of America ranked Oregon 19th among all states in its 2008 report, with 2.63 megabits per second median download speed and a 622 kilobit per second median upload speed. So Oregon ranks highly for a big western state with a relatively small population. But it's also important to note that broadband is not ubiquitously available across the state, and there are business locations and residences and communities with limited or no service available. Oregon has been a progressive state among the states in that it has established in statute a set of policy statements on the importance of broadband telecommunications. In my written testimony, I have provided a recital of the legislative findings relating to broadband. They indicate that Oregon has clearly recognized the importance of broadband and has established the goal of making broadband available throughout the state. These policy statements are valuable as guidance to the state agencies and decision makers. To conclude, I would like to offer the committee three observations as it considers broadband issues and these new opportunities. One is that broadband infrastructure will always be a work in progress as technologies and applications change over time. Two, what constitutes broadband, whether we're talking about thousands of bits per second or millions of bits per second or billions of bits per second, will also be a moving target. And three, I think that's becoming conventional wisdom that the Internet is emerging as the global platform for communication, business, government, education, information storage and distribution, and entertainment. Therefore, a competitive high-speed access to the Internet and telecommunication networks will increasingly become essential for Oregon's institutions, businesses, and as well as individual citizens. Again, thank you for allowing me to participate today, and I'll do my best to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Tamron. Questions for this panel? Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I may have missed this comment, but I was just wondering if you could reassure me where Oregon's at. When I was listening and trying to read through some of this stuff, there's these grants that are available, and the majority of the grants are supposed to be awarded directly to the state, but the program criteria is that there's a 20% match from non-federal sources. And where are we situated with being able to come up with that kind of a match?
Well, first of all, Mr. Chairman, Representative Holvey, the actual applicants, the state itself is just a potential applicant. All kinds of providers would qualify. They just said that each state gets one grant. Now, the 20% match, if we did coordinate, would probably come from the providers themselves because they'd be putting the services in the ground and employing people to do so. Now, if the state decided to deploy some kind of broadband network among the higher education institute or something like that, then we might have to come up with the 20%, but I think that would be difficult in the current times with the challenges you face on your general fund budget. That's kind of how it works. Our state role would be just to sit there and coordinate it so that the applicants would have to file applications contemporaneously with both the NTIA and the state, so we could then see and then try to prioritize the areas that have the greatest need and the greatest population meeting the criteria of the statute, then send that up as our preference, the governor's preference, consultation with the legislature, go up and show that these are the things we'd like to see funded first, because it is a limited amount of money. It's kind of the first on a down payment. According to the current administration, this is just the initial down payment on an ongoing program to deploy broadband throughout the country. They just want to do this as a stimulus to try to help the country recover. So there's going to be broadband mapping that's going to come out as part of this. And next, this can take a while to map the state, but in the meantime, we have to take the low-hanging fruit, so to speak, and get those things up and going. But then we'll have another, I expect, another funding mechanism coming out, you know, maybe later this year or next year, where they'll have a longer-term funding mechanism to help fund additional deployments to the states. And right now, we just want the state kind of coordinating that and prioritizing it, and then NTIA makes the final decision.
Follow up,
please.
Thank you for that. I think I was just maybe misreading the line. I was just concerned that the way it was worded, that the state applies as the eligible entity, and it's awarded directly to the state, but that doesn't mean that we can't have private partners helping provide that matching dollars, is what you're saying.
Right. I would expect, Mr. Chairman and Representative Holby, that would be how the work gets done.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All of us are hoping to find connections for this huge stimulus being poured out to things we can really use. This seems awfully exciting to me. Do you, anybody have handy how we're mapped so far? In other words, you mentioned that we don't have broadband, obviously, everywhere. Do we have a map of where we are right now, just for a context?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gillum, one of the provisions of the Act is to provide something that hasn't taken place in the country to date, and that is to provide a definitive map of where broadband exists and where it doesn't exist, to define served and underserved and unserved areas. I can tell you that in Oregon's 242 incorporated communities, 85% have DSL service from the franchise telephone company, 54% have cable modem services from the franchise cable company, and 12% of the incorporated companies have neither. And beyond that, there is an extensive overlay of various wireless providers, both mobile and fixed wireless. But we don't have a definitive statewide map today.
Quick follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'd love to have what we have before the real mapping goes on, a summary of that, if that's available at your convenience.
I have a map of the DSL services and the high-speed Internet access services provided by cable companies, which I'll be happy to provide to the committee.
Thank you.
Further questions? I have, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment here. The Great Depression brought electrification to much of rural America, and as someone whose vast majority of my district is rural and represents that high-hanging fruit, and who is whose district is largely without modern communications, we would very much look forward to this. I don't know of anything that could bring about faster and perhaps more broad-based economic development than modern-day high-speed communications. The vast majority of my district is locked out of that right now, and it is needed desperately.
Further questions for this panel? I have one. You may have said this in what you just presented, but it would be interesting to know what you think we need the most in this state. If you were prioritizing it, I'm going to ask the commissioner that to answer that question.
Well, I think the governor's identified some of the areas that can get us to the greatest population quickest, and that begins with telemedicine all the way down through public safety issues. I also, as Representative Witt said, I used to represent Loudoun County, and they don't have any DSL, and so this is another area that I hope we target, is because that's important to those people, that they participate in this economic revitalization as well. But we're focusing on those rural areas that have population, 2,000 to 5,000 population cities that don't have any kind of broadband service over there. It's dial-up, and that's unacceptable. So we're trying to get out to that. Plus, we do have some rural hospitals, because the funding for the current telehealth medicine, I think, is aimed at not-for-profits and publicly owned hospitals, but the for-profit hospitals are left out. We have a lot of libraries and schools still not hooked up, and those serve a lot of populations. So we need to use this money to get out there to those pockets and then move down there, and then we go further out, because as you get out from there, it gets progressively more expensive. But we should have no reason why we shouldn't have these small rural communities and these telehealth things going as part of this initial stimulus.
And please, Representative Gil.
Galizio. He's Gillum.
Yep.
Gilliam.
Gilliam.
Can any of these funds be used for the Oregon Interoperability Network, Owen?
I think it's expressly mentioned in the statute that it can go for public safety. Now, then it says don't be taking any money from the other RUS fund. You know, there's two funds here, NTI and RUS, and so the question are you prohibited from going to another federal fund to get monies for this? And I think that's the open question. We think it can be part of the process, and if you can put a fiber out to a place and you can tap into it for E911, you know, all the things you need, great. That's multiple use. That's what we have to have. If you're going to plumb a hospital, then make sure you get it to all the rest of the community as you go by. That's the great benefit of this. So we hope this, in dovetail with the telehealth medicine stuff that's going out as we speak, will help some of that happen. But we've got to use it for multiple purposes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Galizio, if I could just add, and this is really off the top of my head, because everything is on the table, and the purpose areas are pretty broad from the Department of Commerce guidelines. The Owen project is a critically important project for public safety that will allow first responders in the field to actually be able to talk to each other, that will rebuild the infrastructure, state-owned infrastructure that you know was put together in the 50s, for which we need to recruit programmers from retirement homes to come fix and buy parts off of eBay. That said, my hit is that this is not money that Owen is going after. My hit is that we need to coordinate the requests or the proposals for this money in a way that maximizes the interconnections that are possible when the state is poised, as it is now, to continue the next phase of a very significant public safety communications project that's going to be restoring and building towers and buildings around the state in areas of the state, I might add, in which it's not particularly commercially viable for private industry to go in. And there you have, you know, space on towers, and you have opportunities to leverage what the state has done, potentially with private dollars, potentially that are funded through the stimulus package or otherwise. There are a lot of, I hope I'm being as articulate as possible. I guess what I'm saying is I see tons of opportunities, but I don't necessarily see this flow of dollars as something that would fund that one particular project.
That one. I have no idea.
Further questions? Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very interesting.
Thank you.
All right. Our next panel is Mike Dewey, Amy Tychison, and Ginny Lang. And we would ask that the testimony be kept to something around 4 minutes, if that's possible, each. Thanks.
Thank you. I'll start. Sorry, Jenny. get going here, Mr. Chair. Mike Dewey, representing the Oregon Cable Telecommunications Association. I'll be brief. I've represented the cable industry since 1975 and observed that the word broadband was not in our dictionary at that point in time. With me is Amy Tykeson, who will speak to what Ben Broadband is doing. She's the CEO of Ben Broadband. I want to make a few observations first. The cable industry in 2008 spent $14.6 billion in infrastructure improvements. $14.6 billion. This is a $7 billion piece of legislation, so you can see that the industry is moving forward. One of the observations you made when cable operators were in this building a few weeks ago, companies were saying that they were hiring. And that isn't happening in very many places in Oregon. So fortunately, things are a little bit better from our side of the table. There is, though, an economic divide and a digital divide in the rural parts of the state. I'll give you an example. For an income level of $25,000 to $35,000, the take rate for broadband is about 40%. Above $75,000, it's 82%. So you have an issue of income disparity, and you also have an issue of the digital divide, representative, with areas like yours that are difficult to serve, and the economics may not make any sense. One of the things the industry, at least the cable industry, has is a concern is that we want to be sure that we aren't taking public money to compete with private companies that are using their own private capital. I'll relate one story, and then I'll let Ms. Tykeson speak to what Bend is doing and the challenges they have and the investments they're making. I was reading an article about a small town in Africa, and this is a farming community. The farmers are literally dirt poor. A cell tower went up, and all the farmers got cell service, and you'd ask why. It was because they could talk to each other about the best time to plant their plants and if they were having any diseases. So you can see just the value of communication and how it can help our infrastructure. So with regard to how we go after this money and spend this money, we have to be sure we do it very efficiently. We have a small window here. We need to have a lot of collaboration. There need to be a lot of people in the room to talk about what is the best way to do that. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn this over to Ms. Dykeson.
Thank you.
Chairman Benz, members, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak today. I'd like to just make a comment
regarding your name.
Oh, I'm sorry. Amy Tykeson. I'm the CEO and president of Ben Broadband.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to make a comment regarding Commissioner Baum's statements about the mapping and also Mr. Dewey's. Time is of the essence. I did want to point out to the committee that there is a Form 77 that the FCC requires all phone and broadband providers to submit. That was due this week, and it includes broadband speeds by census tract, and it should be very helpful to help identify where we might have some areas of need in expediting some initial mapping processes to meet the June date for funding. In addition, there is another outfit called Connected Nation, which has done a lot of mapping for states like Kentucky and so forth, and they are very well known and respected. So those would be, I would offer those two suggestions. There's two areas I'd like to talk about with you today after I give you a little bit of background about Ben Broadband. The first is wired versus wireless infrastructure to serve rural Oregon, and the second
so we just need to walk through it and call him because Drew's been
back.
Okay.
We'll come back to order. We apparently have electronics again. Is that what you're telling us? Okay. Please continue.
Thank you.
Why don't you state your name again just so the record's
Amy Tykeson, president of Ben Broadband.
Thank you.
So our company began 55 years ago. We've been owned as a family business for about 25 years. We have Redmond, Bend, Sisters, and some of the unincorporated portions of Deschutes County. We employ about 200 people and have a plant infrastructure of about 1,300 miles of fiber and coax serving that area. We've not been afraid to make investments. In the past, since 1997, we've invested over $90 million in Central Oregon to provide a world-class telecommunication services, and I think we were the first in Oregon to introduce a high-speed cable modem service back then, and as a result, we are one of the top 10 cable systems in the United States in terms of our penetration of broadband to the homes that we pass. We offer Metro Ethernet service, high-capacity transport to the schools and medical community, along with major businesses and commercial and residential phone options, along with digital cable offerings. We are also all digital. We have no analog cable service in Central Oregon. We're one of the five cable systems in the U.S. to be all digital. are with regards to wired infrastructure versus wireless for rural Oregon. We acquired wireless spectrum in two auctions in the last 3 years. We've invested over $7 million in that spectrum with the idea that we could expand more efficiently within our footprint to areas that are not economic to build, and also in contiguous and other areas in central Oregon. Our spectrum covers 11 counties in the center of our state, covering about 40% of the land mass and about 9% of the population. We are moving ahead with our plans to deploy in our core area, which will cover between now and 2010 about 50% of the population in those 11 counties, including Harney and Klamath. We would be able to increase that to 91% with grant money. We've already made the investments in the core and the spectrum, and the those communities would be able to take advantage of a very efficient way to reach out to these low-density areas. How do you reach people in Harney County where we're passing, where there's less than one person per square mile efficiently? You don't do it with wired infrastructure. What we're talking about is infrastructure that is based on GSM, LTE futures, which would be speed similar to what is standard for a broadband service today. So the individual residents and small business would have access to high-capacity download speeds, starting at 6 and moving up to probably 50 or 100 megabits in the coming years. Our project is shovel-ready. We would be able to deliver the project within 18 months from the grant monies being distributed. In terms of the industry's thoughts on how these dollars could best be spent, I know there's a lot of ideas. Our feeling is that the money should be focused on unserved areas. There's probably 8 to 10% of homes that are unserved, and these are mostly in rural areas where there's not an economic way to address those homes. The second big opportunity is underserved populations. About 35 million homes don't have access or don't choose to subscribe to broadband, even though they could. Either they, as Mike said, they can't afford it, they don't think it's relevant to them, or they don't have a computer, for example. So we would focus the dollars on unserved, underserved populations, and only then, if there's monies remaining, underserved areas that are providing a below standard speed, broadband speed opportunity. So in conclusion, the options on mapping could be carefully considered to not slow down the grant process. Second, licensed spectrum is the best choice for broadband in rural Oregon. Third, companies have proven track records like Bend Broadband with shovel-ready projects can speed speed broadband expansion and adoption to meet the federal requirements and boost economic development, support education, and the medical community. And finally, by focusing on unserved areas and underserved populations, we'll be able to move the needle together to reach the most people with broadband in the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. And particularly thank you for those kind remarks about Harney County, since that's my home. And that brings us to Jenny Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jenny Lang. I represent Quest Communications. And I've submitted two items for your review. One is a proposal that Quest has made to NTIA, to RUS, to the Congress on how the broadband stimulus money might be best used. And the other is some comments on how the the congressional package might serve the kinds of needs that Mr. O'Leary suggested are in the governor's priorities as well, telehealth, telemedicine, distance learning, and so on. I'll be very brief. At the moment, we have 85% of our subscribers covered with high-speed access in Oregon today, and we are preparing materials to make a proposal to NTIA or RUS to cover an additional 10%, because, as Ms. Tyson mentioned, those are the most remote, high-cost areas and the toughest to make pencil out. So we are preparing materials to do that now. Our goal would be, first of all, unserved areas, providing at least 7 megabits, and that the decisions on how the money should be dispersed would be technology neutral, depending on what would make most sense for any given area. We are comfortable with the idea of the state getting a grant of some kind and it being administered or overseen either through the governor's office or in a cooperative way with OECDD and the Public Utility Commission. In 1999, legislation was passed that included $120 million of investment by Quest in primarily rural infrastructure, and the way that money was managed was through OECDD with a project manager and a small team of people who reviewed applications and then authorized the expenditure of the money. So we feel very confident that we, as Oregonians, are lucky not only to have Commissioner Baum plugged in at the national level on what decisions are being made about how this money will be spent, but very confident in the local talent and ability to work together to get this money spent well throughout the state. We're also right now in the process of spending an additional $2 million on high-speed access in remote areas with some assistance at the PUC as far as identifying the projects and getting upgrades done either in speed or deploying additional high-speed access in areas that don't have it at the moment. So I think we're in an excellent position at both the federal level with our two U.S. senators who have sent letters along with 8 others to the acting secretary for commerce, the agriculture department, and the FCC acting chairman, saying that they believe that the first priority should be unserved areas. So our state is well represented at the congressional level and certainly at the state level as well. And we look forward to whatever the rules are that that come down, and we'll be ready to go. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're going to ask the League of Cities, Andrea, come up. I'll let you pronounce your last name because I'm sure I'll not do it correctly. And then from the City of Portland, Martha Pellegrino, and the Dalles, Nolan Young.
Good afternoon, Chair Benz, members of the committee, Andrea Fogue with the League of Oregon Cities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon. Broadband is a very important issue for cities. So when you think about broadband, think about it in terms of a key service that needs to be provided, an essential service. You know that cities provide roads and water and sewer. Well, broadband is that next critical infrastructure. And along those lines, cities play a critical role in providing those services. So today, the most important thing you're going to hear from cities are the folks that are on the ground providing those services that have made that investment and what that means to their communities. So today, you're going to hear from a panel of folks. In addition to the City of Portland, the City of the Dalles, you're going to hear from Cottage Grove, Sandy, Monmouth Independence Network, and also the Regional Fiber Consortium. So these folks are going to be able to tell you what it means every day. They are working with their businesses. They're working with their citizens. So they know what the needs are in those communities. So as we look at the state, it's important that we take a comprehensive approach when we look at broadband policy. You've heard today a little bit about underserved and unserved areas. Those are critical pieces. But we also need to look at the uses for broadband. Really, the potential is unparalleled in terms of what we can do. Everything from telemedicine, distance learning, to reducing the carbon footprint. I mean, it's really amazing when you begin to wrap your mind around the potential for broadband applications. And so this is something that as a state, we really must take the opportunity and invest in, not just for Oregon's economy, but so that Oregon can compete in the global economy. And I want to talk about a couple of pieces. We have are working on the federal stimulus package. This opportunity, this really infusion of funding is going to be very important, not just to Oregon's economy, but to compete globally. And the League is working through the National League of Cities and also an organization called the National Association of Telecommunications Officers and Advisors, NATOA. We are very privileged in Oregon to have, as the president of that organization, Mary Beth Henry with the City of Portland. So we are really in the mix in terms of being able to participate in these discussions. So a couple of things with the stimulus. One, when you think about the uses and the speeds necessary, we've got to make sure that those upload and download speeds meet international standards. Now, I'm going to throw a number out here, 100 megabits per second. That sounds like a heck of a lot, but there are already folks internationally that have this standard in place. And if Oregon wants to compete, we need to push for that standard to be part of what comes out of this stimulus. And last time I looked, the number was 17th in the world, the United States is. That's a whole lot of industrialized nations that are far ahead of us in terms of deploying broadband. The second piece of that is right now cities have the ability to compete directly for those funds. We support that ability. If there's going to be some coordination on the statewide level through the governor's office, through the Public Utility Commission, we certainly want the opportunity to participate and be able to be partners in that process. And with that, I'd just like to leave you with the thought that Oregon, we truly are a forward-looking state, and we are leaders, and this is an area where we can continue to demonstrate that leadership. And now I'd like you to hear from some of the folks that work with us every day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, because today is Rural Oregon Day, I would like to defer to my counterpart here from the Dalles.
Thank you very much. Nolan Young, City Manager for the City of the Dalles. Mr. Chair and committee members, I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to you about this topic. It's got a soft spot in my heart because I can tell you today as I share with you our story, which is included in written testimony that I've submitted, that this has had a big impact on the City of the Dalles. The City of the Dalles wouldn't be the community that it is today if we had not been able to bring broadband into the community. At the turn of the century, the City of the Dalles and Wasco County bonded together to investigate bringing urban level broadband services at urban rates into our rural community. This was because a local provider looked us in the eye after we had lost a new business to the community and said, I'm sorry, we're probably 5 to 10 years out before you're going to have anything of this nature in our community. It may even be longer. So we proceeded to try to take and move it forward ourselves. The local telecom provider opposed us. In fact, if you want, I can show you the scars that I still have today from some of our engagements as we work through the public process to bring broadband into the community. The City of the Dalles and Wasco County created an intergovernmental agency known as the Quality Life Intergovernmental Agency, known as QLife. We constructed a 17-mile fiber optic system that was funded with 50% grants and 50% loans. These were public grants, public loans. Without this funding, we would have been unable to construct a system. Without this system, the City of the Dalles today would probably not have broadband services. Benefits of to the community. Our local education system, which includes K through 12 and a community college, now has a totally integrated system that the Education Service District is also a part of, where all the schools are able to talk together and then also to do distant learning and connect to the outside world. An example of what they used to have, one college student was sitting in the lab one day and was running one program and decided to take and run another application, and bang, crashed the entire system at the entire college because he overloaded it with just two applications. Today, they are receiving, for the same price that they paid for T1 service back in 2003, 100 megabit to gig service. The city and the county government have been able to tie all of our facilities together. This has saved us significant funds. Mid-Columbia Medical Center has been able to tie together 17 facilities, increasing the speed at which they can safely and surely share medical information. Columbia River Bank was able to consolidate their business offices in the Dalles, initially saving 40 jobs in the community, bringing in 50 new jobs, and we just received notification that an additional 30 jobs will move into the community because we have broadband service where they can communicate with their other facilities. The system has been able to operate with no public subsidy and has been able to take and meet both its debt retirement and its operation costs. The local provider who said that it would be 5 to 10 years before we received service, miraculously, before we were able to even turn our system up, bang, we had service. So another benefit is we've been able to bring in competition. Some of our customers include four internet service providers, four different CLEX, and even the ILEC is connecting to other CLEC providers through our system. Our fiber optic system has had economic development benefits. Google, located in the Dalles, the only reason they located in the Dalles is because we had broadband in the community and we had a fiber optic loop that could connect to a site that was shovel-ready. Use of the federal stimulus funds, if I can just touch on that briefly. We do plan on submitting a grant application. We hope that that avenue is left open for us. We are looking at two things. Because our system is also a county system, we're trying to provide broadband services into the southern part of the community, which is very rural in nature. We're the only city in the county that has a population over 500. The second is to provide a wireless umbrella over the community for public safety and also to the fringes of the urban area so that we can take and reach those who live in those fringes who currently do not have any broadband high-speed service. In addition, we want to bridge this gap between the economic disparity that was talked about earlier and allow availability to those who currently cannot afford internet service. Our request of the legislature is really simple. Allow us to continue to have the flexibility that we have to have an impact on our communities by being involved in bringing broadband services to our communities, and also allow us to have the access to grant and loan funds that will make this possible. Thank you for your time, and later we'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, and thanks for driving in from the Dalles.
You bet. Pleasure.
Mr. Pellegrino.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Martha Pellegrino with City of Portland. It's appropriate to say I am completely envious of the network that Mr. Young just described, and think that they've done fantastic things in the Dalles, and if we could only meet that type of network in the City of Portland, we would be overjoyed. I'm here today to testify in support of House Joint Resolution 6. I've submitted two items into the record. First is a letter to the committee from Mary Beth Henry, who is the director, Deputy Director of Portland's Cable Communications Office, and as Andrea Fogg mentioned, the president of NATOA, which is a national organization of local officials who promote community interest in communications. She regrets that she's unable to be here today, but is very much involved in the national discussion on broadband, and I know would be very happy to serve as a resource to this committee as the discussion continues. The letter she submitted actually also references House Bill 3158, and is supportive of that as well. I understand that there's an informational hearing scheduled on that today. The second document that I handed out is the outlines NATOA's 10 broadband principles. These principles serve as a conceptual guide to the future of broadband deployment and emphasize the importance of cooperation among all stakeholders, public and private alike, to get us there. I'm not going to restate the testimony already provided, but I would wish to make just a couple of very brief points. First, I would echo the comments that have been made that broadband infrastructure is critical to the future of Oregon. When most people think of broadband, they think of their home or business internet service and do not consider the wide ranges of uses and applications that could significantly change the way we live and do business. Even beyond job creation and economic development, the broadband has wide-ranging implications for the future of education, healthcare, public safety, sustainability, transportation, and community development. Second brief point I would like to make is that I would like to encourage this committee to think of and set as a goal for Oregon that broadband ought to be universal and affordable. And there have been some great comments made about serving underserved and an unserved part of the state. One last point I would like to make before I close is I don't want to leave you with the impression that in the City of Portland we have competition in broadband. In the area where I live in Southeast Portland, when I moved into my house a couple of years ago, there was one provider. I had one option, and there I think I must be in that 15% where there isn't complete build-out. So there really is a huge amount of work to be done in both urban and rural areas of the state, and I would commend this committee for taking up this issue and look forward to being involved in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel?
Just a quick comment, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Gilman.
Mr. Young, I want to give you a chance to correct your record.
Oh.
I'm sure Google wouldn't have come without broadband.
That's correct.
There are many reasons they would have come to the Dalles. Am I correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. Further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair? Oops, I'm sorry. Hold on.
Before they get away, I just wanted to comment on our ranking as a country of 17th and your reference to, I guess the bandwidth. And maybe you're not the technical people to ask, but what's it take for us to get that up to that kind of bandwidth?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holby, you're correct. I am not the technical expert. I would be more than happy to get back to you on that question, but I have a feeling that possibly one of the panelists coming up, Phil, might be able to answer that for you. So if
okay.
You still need additional information after that, I'd be happy to provide it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Panel members. Our next panel will be Cottage Grove, Richard Myers, City of Sandy, Scott
Lazenby,
and Monmouth Dependence, John McArdle, and Phil Garrett.
I have three chairs.
So one of you will have to wait. I'm a fourth chair.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Richard Myers, the city manager in Cottage Grove. I've prepared some written testimony and just kind of briefly go over that for you a little bit, explain what we're doing in Cottage Grove. We aren't to the point of the Dalles, but we've just basically begun our construction. Cottage Grove was a broadband-challenged community, and it was difficult. We had no fiber access in our community at all. We had a number of fiber lines that went through our community, but no access to that. Our city council was really concerned about that, and we joined with the we're one of the founding members of the Fiber Consortium that you'll hear from later on, and started pursuing opportunities to expand and increase our broadband services in Cottage Grove. We did work with a number of private parties to try to encourage and to get them to move forward and do some kind of service. All of those fell through. We never were able to get anything to take place. And so our city council jumped forward and said, made the commitment to do this for the community. Some of the issues that are there and the needs that are demonstrated, and tell you some of the stories that are associated with it. We're partnering with the city of Cresswell, the Cresswell School District, the Cottage Grove School District, South Lane School District. The fire district as well has joined in as in visiting with us. And discussing, we're working with the Fiber South and the Fiber Consortium now, as well as the ESD, Lane ESD. All of those together are working together to develop this. We acquired two strands of a pair of fiber from the consortium. We've lit that. We have traffic in Cottage Grove through that fiber now. And we're regenerating in Cresswell because it's a little far from Eugene to get to us. Sometimes it's farther if you're going south, but it's not so far if you're going north to Eugene. But it's lit, and we're traveling traffic on that. We are hooking up the schools and the public facilities, and that was our purpose, is to get our public facilities connected. Currently, our schools will run on a T3, which is a bundle of three T1s. If one of the classrooms in the school decides to download a video from Lane ESD and watch that, when I went to school, you got the projector, and you ordered the thing, and it came in, and you showed it. Nowadays, you watch it on the computer or on the TV screen or on the projector on the screen, and you don't even ever see the real hard copy of the film. It's back at the ESD. Only one of the classrooms in our entire school district can watch a film at the same time. No other classes can watch it with their current bandwidth. So with our project, all the classrooms in the school district will be able to watch a video at the same time, and it'll be a different video, as well as continue to use their phone system and their data and computer systems for the school district. So it's a huge step forward that we're making. We also have an industrial park that we constructed. We began construction in 1998. It's essentially all sold out and developed. We have a national bottling company that has moved in, a family-owned business that is doing business around the world. They need to have broadband, and for contacting the Federal Alcohol and Tobacco and in proving the stuff they're doing and or doing other things with the FDA and other federal agencies as well as state and other customers. They went to the current incumbent, and the incumbent said, we don't have any plans to do anything. You can't get even DSL. They went to the cable company. They couldn't get anything there either. They're currently on satellite, and the satellite doesn't work regularly. The download speeds are great, but the upload speeds are terrible, and it just does not work for them. One of the things we will be doing is we'll be hooking them into our fiber network with a wireless bridge so that they can then have that connection and that bandwidth speed that they need to run their business. It is a global business that needs to be there. We have three other global businesses, Pacific Yurts, Territorial Seeds, and Starfire Lumber, that are inside the city limits that are desperately in need of those telecommunication access points to be able to discuss with their clients. The third area that our city council identified as a strong need was our public safety. We have the mobile data units, the mobile data ports, a laptop computer in the patrol cars. It provides great information for our officers when they're on the street. When they stop someone and their license just doesn't seem right and they can get a picture of the person who's supposed to be on that license, and they can verify information and do that over their laptop in their car. Those laptops currently run on what's called an air card or a cell card, basically that plugs in the card port. And it's running at 100 kilobytes, so just a little faster than your dial-up speed. 20 seconds to a minute to wait for some of that information is a dangerous and time-consuming thing when you're on the street dealing with the different situations that they're facing. So as a part of our project, we're putting in a fiber loop that's going to go to all the schools. The city council has made the commitment to over $2 million that they've invested in this project. We've saved about $700,000 in franchise fees from our telecommunications and cable providers to fund a portion of that. We're financing the rest. The school district has thrown in $250,000. The ESD has thrown in $50,000 or a little more than $50,000 into the project as well.
Mr. Myers, I'm going to have to ask you to kind of wind her up.
Okay.
Or the rest of the panel will be very angry and upset with you.
So we are moving quickly forward on that project, and we're under construction. We've developed the conduit, and we're put into the schools. We'll be pulling fiber in the next month and connecting them. And so we're in support of the resolution, the House Joint Resolution 6. We need a broadband policy in this state. We are behind. And when I look at the students at our high school with our brand new state-of-the-art high school, except for telecommunications, it is pitiful that we're putting kids out into the workforce and they're dealing with telecommunications and technology that is from yesteryear. And that is one of the points that is just really important for us and for our city council.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Scott Lazenby. I've been the city manager of the city of Sandy since 1992. Our story is very similar to that of the Dalles. It was the same situation. We had no service at the beginning of this century. And since then, as a city, I think we're the only Oregon city providing DSL service, but we also provide fiber and two kinds of wireless service to not only the city, but the rural area around Sandy. You know, I won't repeat the advantages it's had in economic development. It really has. We can provide, you know, numerous examples of the difference it's made, not only in businesses, but home-based businesses. That's something that we've really tried to emphasize in Sandy and in the area around Sandy, we have a very thriving home-based business there. The other thing that we're doing is bridging the digital divide. We're extending service now to a farm worker housing development and to a senior assisted living centers and subsidized housing, and we will be able to provide free internet service to the residents of those facilities. It's just part of the policy of being a government rather than a private provider. I think, and what you'll hear, is that the cities are really on the leading edge of this in the state. And so we welcome a partnership with the state, but definitely look to the cities as being cutting edge. We're very efficient. We have to be. We've dealt with a lot of these technologies, and I think we really are at the cutting edge. And I want to also say, though, I have appreciated the help and partnership from the state of Oregon, too. We've had good advice, had moral support. Now, Mr. Tamarin has not only given us professional assistance with OECDD, but he happens to be a member of our community and is a volunteer member of our advisory board as well, and we really appreciate that. And I have to say thank you to you as state legislators. Some other states have restricted cities' ability to provide the service to the citizens. You as a legislature have not done that, and I very much appreciate that support.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm John McArdle. I'm the mayor of Independence. I'm also the vice chair of the League of Oregon Cities. I took a little vacation time from my job today to come down because I have a real passion for this. And I want to take about 3 minutes to tell our story. In the late in the, about 1998-1999, we talked to the incumbent providers about providing high-speed internet to our community because we wanted to be on the right side of the electronic divide for economic purposes. Well, they said they couldn't do it till 2014, and we pushed them, and they said December of 2013, and we said, you know, we're taking control of our future. We believe in taking responsibility for what we're going to do in our community. So the cities of Monmouth and Independence got together, created an ORS 190, and worked together and put fiber to the home in front of every house in our community. We offer voice, video, and data. Before I used to have dial-up. I had 25K at home, and it didn't go very... You know what it is. You know, it's awful. I now have 5 megabytes a second, and I'm just a, you know, an end product user, and that's the minimum level what we provide. You know, we have a municipally owned system that that is blowing and going. Our citizens are happy. Our businesses are happy. Our system does payment in lieu of taxes. We pay franchise fees. We pay everything like a business. We took loans. The city put money up. We took an OECDD loan. We were just like any other business. And here's what we're all about. It's about results. It's about economic development results. And let me give you some specific results. We had new businesses, Coefficient, move specifically to our community because of broadband. Robert Lloyd Sheet Metal, one of the largest sheet metal company on the West Coast of the United States, it's streamlined their operations, and they're looking to expand even in this difficult time. Medallion Cabinetry, with over 300 employees and 200,000 square feet, they're part of LK Manufacturing out of Minnesota. Guess what? They're using our services, and they're using them heavily. Our recently launched, and I mean recently as in a couple weeks ago, launched Business our business incubator, the high-speed services are one of the things that are attracting people, and we've got a youth business academy as part of the business incubator that's already operating. 75% of the businesses coming in over the internet. They're making money and teaching kids how to do things. Independent Station, which is a 60,000 square foot mixed-use project that is touted to be the greenest building in the world upon completion, it'll be a platinum LEEDs. They came to Independence and built there because we had broadband to everybody, and they liked the kind of... You know, we even broadcast our high school basketball games. My wife does a little bit of that, too, as a volunteer, over the computer. And so grandmas all over the country can hear it, as long as also with our people at home. We're going to apply for $23 million of the stimulus money so that we can wire the rest of Polk County, because economic development does not stop at the city limits. And so we're going to do that, and the people in the room, hint, there's lots of opportunity. This is good for us. I'm going to turn it over to Phil, who can give you technical things. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. Phil Garrett, General Manager of Minet. I've submitted written testimony. I won't belabor many of the points that that written testimony covers with my discussion here. What I'd like to touch on is just the level of services we're able to provide. Mayor McArdle mentioned that his level of service is a 5 megabit service. That is the lowest. That's the lowest level of service we offer. We offer to residential customers right now 100 megs of data to their endpoints, and we are looking at upping those services as well. To our business community, we can offer up to a gigabit of data service. And that's that we are looking at expanding as well. We have 4 10-gig wavelengths running through our building and can access and take advantage of that volume of data. We have about 7,600 homes and businesses in our two communities. We can and do serve 43% of those homes and businesses currently at this time. We are looking at applying for funding through the economic stimulus plan, and it is around $23 million. We have already completed our mapping project, so we have identified where broadband exists in our throughout our entire county, and what areas really need to be really need to be looked at. A question was asked regarding what it would take, what kind of technology needs to be deployed to get us up on par with many other countries throughout the world. And it is a technology we are deploying is one of our options. There are other options through DOCSIS 3 and bonding cable, but fiber optic to the endpoint and the end user is the technology that you can expand on year after year after year. It has been called future-proof. Personally, I have a hard time saying that because I honestly don't believe in that in the term. But we certainly have a lot of capacity that we can leverage with fiber optics. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Bailey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To your point about future-proof, just out of curiosity, I am cognizant of the fact that as a nation we spent a large sum of money for very good reason to lay telephone cable in this country. We now see third world countries that are leapfrogging us by moving directly to cell phones and bypassing the cables. Is there a case in which we can see down the road direct satellite internet communication that might someday within the next couple of decades become feasible to the point where broadband may be less useful, or is it the case where this is always going to provide a bigger pipe?
It's my opinion that it's the case where this will always provide a bigger pipe.
As opposed to a big truck, I suppose.
As opposed to a big, yes.
Thank you. Further questions on this panel? See none. Thank you very, very, very much. And I think we have three folks. Thanks, left. Milo Meacham, John Dillard, and Grant Wolf. And gentlemen, since we are running short of time, I would sure appreciate it, since we have another bill after this one, if you could keep it fairly concise. Thank you very much. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Rance. My name is Milo Meacham. I'm here representing the Regional Fiber Consortium, which is a group of two counties and approximately 12 cities that have access to fiber optic backbone that connects up parts of seven counties, ranging from Klamath Falls and Coos County to Eugene and then on to Portland. I've submitted written testimony, and I'll try to provide a couple of quick summaries of what we're doing. We're trying, for social and economic reasons, to bring broadband to rural parts of Oregon, those parts of Oregon that are members of the consortium and other counties as well. The reason for this has been mentioned already, but I want to mention a couple of other things in terms of economic development. It's important to have broadband for all ranges of business, small businesses and large businesses. One of the businesses that that we hear from on a regular basis is Willamette Ski, the resort in Willamette Pass. They don't have access to anything more than dial-up connection. It makes it very difficult for them to run their business. They would very much like to have broadband and expand their business. We would very much like to provide them with broadband, and one of the things that we hope to do when we make an application for stimulus money is to put a connection at Willamette Pass to provide them with that business opportunity. The other thing to recognize is that for all businesses now, one of the things that they look at when they look at where they're going to locate is the quality of life that a community provides. And broadband is now one of those characteristic quality of life attributes that people look at. So, for example, when Google came to the Dalles, I think they came there because their employees who live in the Dalles would have access to broadband at home, and they expected that. Their schools would have access to broadband, and they expected that quality of education. So it's a quality of life thing that relates directly to economic development. For those reasons, the consortium has been trying to develop broadband access in a number of areas, and I think that we have had what I would have to acknowledge is mixed success. We've been able to assist Cottage Grove. We've been able to assist other providers to bring services to places like Drain and Klamath Falls and Merrill. But we would like to do more because there's a large area of the area that we serve that's underserved. And I think in closing, what I'd like to do is quickly respond to Representative Holvey's question before, what does it take to get the United States out of 17th position? I think it takes two things. One is, of course, the glib answer is it takes money. With more money and the down payment that the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act is making, we'll be able to move forward with that. But more importantly, I think if we look at the countries that are ahead of us, what it takes is a change in attitude. It takes public participation in the system. Those countries that are ahead of us in broadband are there because their governments, their national government, their local governments, have made the commitment and made the investments themselves and have taken a leadership role in telecommunications. They've not left it to the private providers. There's many circumstances where private providers don't have the economic incentive to bring service to underserved areas because it just doesn't ever pay off. But governments can work and take a leading role and make sure that all areas are served. And so I think the answer to the question of what it takes the state making a commitment to see it happen. It takes working with local governments. It takes a leadership position to not allow the status quo to continue, because as long as the status quo continues, even if you pour more money into it, it's not going to work out to change the United States position. It's not going to work out to bring service to rural Oregon. Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Thank you for that. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brian Wolf, representing the Oregon Telecommunications Association. The OTA represents 30 companies operating throughout Oregon. I've distributed the map. Some of you have gotten the map more than once this session. I apologize for that. But it's useful to look at when we're having this conversation. I can tell you that many, many of those exchanges in the rural areas where the companies operate that I represent have 100% coverage, despite the fact that they are extremely rural and hard to get to. If I can take a stab at answering Representative Foley's question about that and not being glib at all, it does take money, a lot of it. And you have to be really thoughtful and careful when you make investments in that area, because you're probably not going to make it back. Many of our members are borrowers of the rural utility service already. We're going to work closely with Mr. O'Leary and Ms. Hamilton as far as the federal stimulus dollars that might flow into the state of Oregon. We have a meeting with them next week to discuss this and how this might work for everybody's best benefit. In the interest of time, I'm just going to pass it off to Mr. John Dillard from Monroe Telephone Company, one of our members operating down in Benton County. He can explain to you what he's doing and how he might be able to take advantage of some of this money for the benefit of his customers.
Very much appreciate your concern for time, because we're running pretty short, so thank you very much.
I'm John Dillard, President, General Manager, Monroe Telephone. We serve about 50 square miles in southeast Benton County in the community of Monroe, Oregon. We've been an RUS borrower for about 30 years. We have about $2 million invested in our plant. We have about 30 miles of fiber optic cables within the system. I was talking to some of my technicians here the other day, and this is a copper beyond fiber system. We currently are able to deliver over 10 megabits to nearly every home. We are in the process of putting probably another 3 to 4 miles of fiber in for the coming year to increase the ability. In answer to the question of what takes us to get us out of 17th, it's going to take fiber optics to all places. Simply, we cannot use the aerial spectrum to get the 100 megabits that people are going to expect. Monroe, as a community, our school district has 10 megabit pipe between the schools and out to the world. We have several businesses who are able to compete and compete well out of their homes because they have the ability to use the high-speed internet. And the most thing I hear from other rural areas that surround my serving area is that they are limited because they have to put up with a dial-up service. And I am looking real seriously about borrowing RUS money underneath the stimulus program to go into some of those unserved or underserved areas. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to take them.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel?
Oh, one quick question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gillian.
I've gotten the map twice. But is there broadband capability or possibility with the telephone coverage? Is that what I'm looking at?
Any of the telephone exchanges have the ability to do what I've done. You put fiber in, you make what we call serving areas, and beyond that, you use the copper to the home. I have seen in my office a vendor who unfortunately went out of business, was doing testing. He was able to deliver 40 megabits of bandwidth for a mile over our copper wires.
Thank you. Further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Our final panel on this bill will be Representative Jefferson Smith, Eric Schmidt, and Ed Park. I'll have all three of you come up now. Representative Clem, did you want to be heard on this bill?
You're just on the resolution?
We are just on the resolution. That is right.
Are we going to even hear the other bill today?
We're going to try.
We're going to try. So we just have
I don't
two.
Want to cut in on the final.
Okay, good. Then we'll just.
Boring.
Representative Smith, you'll wait. Or did you want to be heard on the bill and the resolution?
I want to do whatever is helpful to the committee, and walk together with my friend Representative Clem to the extent it's helpful to the committee.
Okay.
But he's waiting.
He's
not. Those two gentlemen. Why don't we do that? Right.
That's great. Go ahead, gentlemen.
Okay.
We'll get, if we could ask you to keep your testimonies about 2 minutes each, that would
not
be
not a problem, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Eric Schmidt. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties, and having listened to what has been said here before, only an idiot would get up here and say that they're against broadband in Oregon, and Oregon counties are not idiots. So I would like to be on record as saying that for a long time, Oregon counties have advocated for broadband and advocated for high-speed broadband to urban, suburban, and rural areas of the state. We see it as an economic issue, an education issue, a health issue, and we also see it as a government issue. Oregon counties are moving very quickly toward e-government. More and more of our citizens are asking us to use the Internet as a service, and that's what we're in the business of trying to do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ed Parker. I live, work, and vote in Glen Eden Beach in Lincoln County on the Oregon coast. I'm a member of the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council, on whose behalf HJR 6 was introduced, and I'm a volunteer technology committee chair for the Oregon Health Network, and I do have some written testimony and an Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council report. Oregon needs broadband policy to drive and support critical infrastructure funding and policy decisions by corporations and governments. It's an engine of economic growth. A collaborative Oregon broadband policy is needed to keep the state competitive. Broadband availability throughout the state will permit all parts of Oregon to participate in the coming economic recovery. And I'll quickly run through the nine bullet points. We should enable broadband telecommunications to be developed as infrastructure that is just as essential to the Oregon telecommunications communities as roads, water, and electricity. Representative Witt mentioned earlier the electrification of Oregon with funding during the Depression. Let's use the funding out of this Recovery Act to make broadband universal in Oregon. Second, we need to encourage collaboration and cooperation. This should be a public-private partnership process. Government can't do it alone. Private sector can't do it alone. Let's do it the Oregon way. Let's work together and make it happen. And a third point, broadband for education. The Oregon Department of Education has a very long list of what they call bandwidth-challenged schools, schools in Oregon that have less than 10 megabits of bandwidth capability. One of our top priorities should be to fix that.
We need to promote public awareness for the availability and value of broadband services. It's not the infrastructure that brings about the economic development. It's the uses that we make once the infrastructure is there, and we need to pay attention to the demand side and stimulate its use. Fifth, support the implementation of the Oregon Health Network for the delivery of health care and health care education. Oregon Health Network got $20 million of Federal Communications Commission funding to bring broadband to all the nonprofit hospitals and clinics in the state. But a lot of the doctor's offices in rural Oregon, the rural clinics, haven't legally incorporated as nonprofits, and they're not eligible for that funding.
Mr. Parker, we can see your last 4 points. We very much appreciate
okay.
them, but we've had some gentlemen waiting to go back to some other committees. So if you
okay.
could wind up, we'd appreciate it.
Let me just conclude. I think HJR 6 contributes to Oregon's broadband policy by adding a focus on broadband applications and utilization, not just infrastructure. And I request that you support HJR 6 and urge you to send it to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you for waiting. Questions? Seeing none. Thank you very much, gentlemen. That concludes, I think, our public hearing on HJR 6. With that, we'll open the information hearing on House Bill 3158. And we have Representative Jefferson Smith and Representative Clem. Please read the summary.
HB 3158 establishes the Oregon Broadband Advisory Council, requires the governor to appoint members of this all-volunteer council, delineates the council's representation, term length of members, and general operational rules, names several state agencies as well as the League of Oregon Cities and the Association of Oregon Counties who may provide staff or facilities to the council, delineates its purpose and general programming, declares an emergency.
Who would like to go first?
Harvard. Representative Clem would like me to go first.
Please proceed, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I won't repeat the staff measure summary. I appreciate the committee here.
Representative, can I state your name for the record?
Representative Jefferson Smith.
Thank you.
New member of the Oregon Legislature from District 47. I won't repeat what's already been said, but I will say that the Oregon Broadband Advisory Council will be focused on encouraging and supporting the deployment of broadband telecommunications in underserved areas. We'll be tasked with encouraging the coordination among different organizations and sectors to leverage broadband to their advantage, including, without limitation, state agencies, workforce, development programs, healthcare providers, and educational institutions. It would, as an advisory board, be helpful in over the long term in several things, such as reminding us that when we are digging ground to lay pipe, we are also remembering to lay broadband. In the immediate term, it would be helpful, we think, and so do some national advisors, in putting Oregon in the best possible position to receive discretionary grants as a part of the stimulus package, that if we can have a robust coordinating council, that we can put ourselves in a better position. I only have two more bullet points. We are working with the governor's office who may be doing some of this, in fact, much of this in an executive order, and we have been working with them from the beginning. The conversation we are in now is, as long as there are a few things that we agree on that occur, and amendments, as there will be several in any bill that goes forward, I assume, that the governor's office impression is that a bill to memorialize some of that could be helpful in addition to an executive order. In addition to that, they're inviting both Representative Clem's office and my office, or us, to participate in our office, one of our various staffers, to participate in the work group to develop that executive order. Some principles were included that we are offering, and I really appreciate the hearing, by the way, in case folks here, after hearing all this testimony, have principles that ought to make it into an executive order or into a statute, jot those principles, offer them, be really helpful. Here are a few, for example: fiscal responsibility, urban and rural concern, digital inclusion, expertise and independence among board members. Any principles you have to offer would be helpful. Last, and my precatory language is one thing I love about this particular committee is that it is focused on helping Oregon be a place that competes in the global knowledge economy. And from my perspective, I think our perspective, work that includes working in higher education, early education. It includes becoming Silicon Valley for a new energy economy. I'll give a quick plug to Representative Bailey's East bill. It includes rational labor tax and regulatory standards and investment in technology and transmission of information. I have more to say, but I won't. Instead, I'll turn it over to Representative Clem.
Thank you, Representative Clem.
So, very briefly, I'm Representative Ryan Clem, state representative from Central and East Salem. And as many of you may or may not know, what I do for a living is fix computers and do networking and do that kind of thing. So I'm kind of a computer guy. But the interesting thing is if you look through this bill and you see what things a council like this would work on, the things that really speak to me are about essentially bridging the digital divide. So it's community technology organizations, that's implementing and administering programs for computer ownership, literacy, high-speed internet access, development support of digital inclusion and education programs for broadband adoption. And the reason this is important to me is not because Representative Gilliam's World of Warcraft character keeps spamming, "I invented the internet," all the time in the game. It's really annoying. It's because when I grew up, my brother, myself, and my stepbrother, we all somehow, even though we were all poor, all in Coos Bay, we had technology. Our parents, we ran BBSs out of our basements. We had the latest computers. All three of us work in the IT sector. My brother is a vice president at Microsoft. My other brother lives in Coos Bay and works for a global manufacturing firm doing IT support. And I do IT support, but most of my clients are outside of Marion County. I do it all. None of us have degrees in it. We all have two poli-sci degrees and one business degree. We learned it all by having access to online services that luckily somehow our parents prioritized us to have a modem. It was about, I don't know what the baud rate was back then, 2400, 1200. And it is a fundamental part of sustainability. It's economic development, yes, but it's part of having a society that works. Is the rich and the poor alike need to have access to growing their futures through access to technology. That's all I've got.
Thank you very much. Thank you both for your patience in waiting. And I'm sorry. We have a question. Representative Gillum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you both for being here today, all day. Particularly happy that your mother, Representative Clem, can be proud of two out of three of her sons. Now, give me some assurance that in this makeup, rural Oregon is represented. I appreciate the Association of Oregon Counties input. We heard testimony today that I enjoyed it all, but going deeper in Portland is not as important to me as covering my rural district.
I can take a first crack at that. The first thing I would say is my hunch, and it's only a hunch at this point, is that anybody looking at this with the primary purpose of serving underserved communities would end up going probably 75% rural, 25% urban, because that's where most of the additional need is, right? Second, if you have sort of specific thoughts on makeup of a council in order to address that specific concern, heck, yes. Or if there is a principle we want to make, for instance, I think in one of the principles that I offered in my testimony, I said, that there should be urban and rural concern. So I think both by makeup and by the principles, they're sort of raison d'etre stated in the legislation. Hopefully we would address that.
Okay. And I just to follow up, most of the words he uses I don't understand, but I concur if you've
sorry for raison d'etre.
If it can keep your level 80 shaman from coming after my warlock.
Thank you very much.
Where's
the level? No further questions. Close information hearing on House Bill 3158. We're adjourned.